Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Langwin, hoping you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day. Especially the joy you receive when you then share that love with others. I'd like to begin our program, as we do each week, with a story that is based on faith and formed with an imagination, kind of a platform from which to build our discussion. Jesus was pleased to be back with his disciples. John said, "Master, we have raised many questions we've not been able to answer while you were away. We even discussed them in the temple, but we were not satisfied with any of the answers given to us." Jesus sat down and said, "Tell me what they are now." John asked, "Master, what is truly important in life?" Jesus thought for a moment and answered, "My friends, look around you. What do you see?" Peter answered, "I see olive trees." "Wheat," John said, "and a well where the women draw water." "What else do you see?" Jesus asked again. Peter replied, "I see a rock, I see dirt, I see a few struggling flowers, that's all I see." "Oh no, there's more," Judas asked, added quickly. "There is the sky and the clouds." Jesus remained silent for a few moments before he said, "My friends, do you not see the hand of God in all of creation? When you examine life, you will find his gifts. If you remember this, you will respect all of life, and you will know that when one dies, one is not forgotten, perhaps by family and friends, but not by the Creator of life. The Father has given us many gifts which man takes for granted, or perhaps ignores: the sky, the sun, the rain, the moon, and the stars, the earth and the seas which bring forth life. These are all gifts. The Father also gives talent to each of us. We must care for that talent like a seed so that it will develop and bear fruit which we can share with others. These gifts of the Father are necessary for life." Then Jesus bent down, picked up from the ground a kernel of wheat which had blown there from the fields, and said, "This seed of life is very tiny, but if it is planted in fertile soil, it will grow and multiply. If it is planted in barren ground, it will struggle, but still try to grow. I tell you this, what is important in life is to pass on truth, wisdom, knowledge, respect, caring, so that they may bear fruit in others. And when you return home, you will be able to tell what you did with your gifts and not have to hide your face in shame." A story of faith and imagination. Our guest this evening writes in the first chapter of his latest book, titled A Chronicle of Grief, Finding Life After Traumatic Loss. Traumatic loss is a technical term. Roughly speaking, it means experiencing something that is unexpected, jarring, and devastating, which causes injury with long-term effects, soldiers experience trauma. If our house burns to the ground, we might experience trauma. Someone who is mugged or raped or kidnapped certainly has gone through trauma. People react differently to traumatic events. When in an ordinary day we have breakfast with a family member and that evening their body is at the morgue, we've gone through trauma. Our lives are fundamentally changed when we go through trauma, and some people would say they have never recovered. But it is possible to survive, to go on living. The word itself, survive, means to continue to live or exist, especially in spite of hardship or danger. This book could be difficult reading. In the months that followed our daughter's death, I knew I had to be brutally honest. That to receive full comfort, I had to gaze straight ahead at the pain. I had a strong desire to find the solid ground of faith in God beneath my feet. But I knew that voicing mindless, spiritual cliches would be like blowing bubbles. Platitudes fall flat. There are things we can do to survive, and more. We need to find those ways. The author of those words and our guest this evening is Mel Lawrence. He trains an international network of Christian leaders, ministry pioneers, and thought leaders through the Brook Network. He served as senior pastor of Elmbrook Church in Brookfield, Wisconsin for 10 years. He now serves at Elmbrook's Minister at Large, teaching in North America, Asia, Africa, and Latin America. And he holds a PhD in the history of Christian thought from Marquette University. His books include Leadership Today and Life After Death. Mel Lawrence, welcome to Amplify. Oh. Here we go. I have to push the right button, Mel.
Okay. Am I with you now?
Yes, you are. Sorry about that.
It's okay. I'm glad to be with you and your audience this evening.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit about what is a thought leader that you train? How and for what do you train such people?
Well, I've been in local church ministry for 40 years, and in the last 15 years or so, I've gotten more into training other leaders, and in particular, international leaders. We interact with people across the different continents that you mentioned, and a lot of it is with very intensive peer learning. It's 15 or 20 people at a time together for a few weeks to learn from each other and to pass on to each other the wisdom that we've picked up over the years.
And let's get right into the topic then this evening, A Chronicle of Grief, Finding Loss After Traumatic Loss. You've dedicated this book to those who have suffered devastating loss and are hoping to survive and something more. And there's a great deal of traumatic loss today, what with COVID and other things that are happening in our lives.
Yes, there is. I mean, just this morning, I talked with three different people who reported some kind of devastating loss. A gentleman who lost his wife a year ago, very suddenly, she just collapsed from a brain aneurysm. Somebody else whose good friend had a kid who died by suicide, and then a third person. So, you know, I've been a pastor long enough that I've seen tragic loss. I've officiated at many, many funerals, but now I'm more aware than ever since the death of our daughter of 3.5 years ago of how this is part of life, and we need to be there for each other.
And Eva Helen Lawrence was 30 years old. Beautiful picture of her in the book that you have. It shows that you can see in her eyes the great life that she had. That was a very devastating loss for you. Tell us a little bit about that experience, personal experience. And it was curious because you had written a couple of books on this same topic previously, not knowing that there would be a third book like this.
Yeah. I had co-authored with a friend a couple of books on grief and trauma years ago. But at the age of 30, our daughter Eva suddenly died one day. She had been ill with an autoimmune disease for several years that had really weakened her, although she wasn't in any particular danger. But when she got an infection one day, it just kind of raced through her, and she collapsed, and they took her by ambulance to the hospital trying to resuscitate her. But she was gone. I was out of town at the time. My wife was with her, and so I had to drive 150 miles knowing of this crisis that was unfolding. And as I mentioned in the part that you read, you start the day thinking that it's going to be a normal day, and at the end of the day, you are talking with a medical examiner and arranging for what is to be done with the body of your own child. It's a unbelievably devastating loss.
And just some of your first thoughts, where you refer to it as a survival story. It was the unthinkable most. For 14 months, you felt tortured. You asked the questions that many of us have asked: how can this be? What do we do now? What will happen to us? And you point out, you experience that many things in life can be overwhelming, and we need people who care, and we need to have faith in God, because no one survives on their own, and that facing traumatic loss is about keeping our sanity and taking care of those who depend on us. We do what we have to do, and part of what helped you was to help others. You wrote a few paragraphs each month. For you, it was survival, it was a search for meaning. And sympathy, you point out, is the height of compassion, not just feeling sorry, but suffering for another. And these are only a few of the thoughts. It's such a beautiful, powerful book that I list those just among so many other thoughts that you express. Why did you start this book, and why?
It's not a book. I've written numerous books. This is the one I didn't want to write, and in fact, I intended not to write. But what I did was, on that first day, we got home, and I wrote an email to our good friends, and then I posted on social media what had happened, and that got word around very quickly. And then a week later, I wrote a few paragraphs, really, frankly, just to get the pain off of my chest and to express it to others. I was just very simply saying what was going on. I was very honest. It was painful what I wrote, but I sent it to people. And then about once a month, I wrote something and posted it or emailed it. And people were telling me that it was very, very helpful to them, because I just expressed how I was looking to survive through it. But it was also very concrete about, in those early days, the fear, the shock, sometimes the panic that sets in, all kinds of experiences that are extremely uncomfortable. And then a couple of years later, somebody gave me a small book about somebody who had lost their son. I read that, and I just started taking those writings from that first year and wrote around it and offered that to people, and published it with the University Press. And I'm just glad, you know, I had three conversations today with people who said it's been helpful to them. But surviving is the idea that you're going to have to do some things in the case of a sudden and traumatic loss just to get through the day. But, you know, 6 months later, it's easier to get through the day, and 12 months after, it's easier than that, and a year after that. And when you lose your child, the pain is always there. The profound sense of loss is always there. But it gets easier to survive your days. But in those early days, I think a lot of people don't know what's happening to them. And that's why I wanted to reach out to help, to say this is normal. If you're going through all kinds of dramatic experiences, and if you feel as though you may not survive, but you can get through it.
Now, you point out that sometimes life is just a matter of getting through it. But even at that point, you expect to know so much more in 5 to 10 years, don't you?
Yes, for sure. And I think it's honoring to God when we survive. I used to think, surviving doesn't sound very honorable. But, to just keep your nose above water, to plot ahead day by day, to lament as appropriate, I think that lament is no less an act of worship than praise is, because in our lament, in a way, what we're doing is we're expressing the goodness of the person that we lost. And we lost a beautiful young daughter. Eva was a beautiful young woman, very talented, very bright. Her name, Eva Helen.
Even means light.
Helen means light. And indeed, one person told me later she was the most radiant person they had ever met. That was before she started to get sick, and the illness robbed her of a lot of that. But the lament and just honestly expressing where you're at is an act of faith, an act of love in and of itself. And in our culture, I think that we look for a lot of shortcuts around grief, but grief is something you just have to go through. Grief itself doesn't injure anybody. It hurts, but you have to go through it. It's not a problem to be solved, but a passageway that we have to go through.
You point out that death is an absolute dividing line, that in the face of danger, our instincts drive us to action. We want to do something. And when it comes to Eva, you wonder, how can it be possible that you were not able, or your wife Ingrid, were not able to hug and comfort her anymore, your son, and that the death seemed like a power in itself. And you ask the question, how can everything change in a day?
Yeah. Well, and those are the experiences that we had in the early days. Our daughter lived with us, and so, I'd go to her room, and there's a half can of soda, there's a candy wrapper, there's a smell of perfume in the air, and it all seems too bizarre to be true, too difficult to be true. And that's what you need to get through in the early days, And then you come to the day when you have to pack up belongings, decide what you're going to do, extremely difficult stuff. But I wanted people in this book to know that if you're going through that and you say to yourself, I had no idea it would be this difficult, that's normal. You're not alone, but you can get through it and you can survive. Right. And more than survive, you can thrive in your life later on.
Yes, you write that in the early days, surviving meant getting through not just every day, but every hour and minute of the day, and that months of grieving can be normal. We just do what we have to do. And you raise a question, what about the assurance that Eva had a place in the great mystery that is the presence of God? And God allows us to weep and to shout. These are the sure sign of God, God's greatest gift. We're going to take this break. Welcome back to Amplify, where our, I want to say special guest, because it's, I'll say something about his book in a second, but is Reverend Mel Lawrence. He served as senior pastor of Elmbrook Church in Brookfield, Wisconsin for 10 years. He's now its minister at large. His 30-year-old daughter died. It's a traumatic experience for him and the family, and he writes about it with such beauty and grace and love and spiritual power, and it's something in most of us at one moment or another in our life we need I'm trying to think of the really traumatic ones. There's life when anyone that's loved dies can be very traumatic. I can remember when I was in first year high school developing this friendship with someone, and he died. He was electrocuted while on walking across the top of a roof, and that just raised so many questions to me that I didn't understand. And say a little bit about there's so many questions people ask, and you point out that the pain of loss does not mean you have a lack of faith, and that crying out to God is no less an act of worship than praising God, is it?
Right, because if it weren't for the enormous love that we have for somebody, we wouldn't feel the great pain. And that's the irony, is that the pain speaks of our love. And when we shed tears with our friends, when we have a difficult time with the funeral, if we express to people our distress at losing a person, it's a way of appreciating God's great gift through that person. And we need to really, as a society, do better with giving each other permission to grieve. There's a lot of reasons why we try to shortcut that. It's understandable that we don't want to linger there a long time. But it says in the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, it's good to go into the house of mourning, and a sad face is good for the heart when you've experienced loss, because it is a way of adjusting. But things don't stay there. There is no time frame for one person. It's a matter of months. For somebody else, it's years. And even in a family, for my wife, her experience of grief looked one way. In some ways, the second year was more difficult than the first. For me, it was the opposite.
Yes.
And our son, it was different too. But that's okay.
Because grieving, you point out, can pull us in different directions. And let me read something. You wrote her a note on Father's Day, because you had been thinking about how your loved one is gone, but you know.
And that was 14 days after she passed away,
right?
Father's Day.
What it cannot be, and that all love, all the joy, all the personal knowing could disappear into thin air. And you write, I was captivated. Well, you write about the note. I was captivated by one main thought. The person Eva was is exactly what the world needs. She expressed beauty in the face of ugliness, depth instead of superficiality, honesty instead of deception. Ingrid, your wife, and Chris, your son, and I, and relatives and friends felt her loss, but I also sensed a loss in the world, a loss of goodness and truth and beauty, so needed, so rare. I wrote to her that I would try as much as I could to talk to people about how we all need to do better with God's help, that life is too short to play games, that we need to be selfless and completely respectful of others. And I wondered, why is this not obvious to all of us all of the time? Why does it take death to open our eyes to life? Do you have any beginnings of answer to the questions you pose?
It's a question that, in a way, doesn't require an answer. And
okay.
That's something else I would tell people in grieving. You may have all kinds of questions that come up. Why did this happen? For instance, that's the most common one. And even if somebody gave you a watertight answer, it's not going to bring your loved one back. It's not really going to solve anything. And so I tell people all the time, don't feel as though what you owe your grieving friend is a tidy answer, because it isn't really going to solve the problem. An interesting thing happened at her memorial service. My wife said to me, well, my wife and I had decided that neither one of us were going to take part in a eulogy. We just wanted to be ministered to it at the funeral. And but at the end of the service, I rose to my feet and I took a couple steps to the microphone, just because I felt an overwhelming sense of wanting to express what you just read, and that is that we need to do better. We need to take what we sense in the loss and say, let's try to be deep people, not superficial people. Let's aim at goodness. Let's aim at beauty. And I'm glad for that. I'm glad for the memory of the type of person that she was, that I can, it reminds me continually about what's important in life. I was just cleaning my office just yesterday, and I ran across a note that she wrote to me, I think on some Father's Day years ago. And it was just a reminder of her spirit, and it motivated me. Well, it made me very sad, but it also motivated me to talk to you tonight and to go on talking to people about what's important.
Right. You point out that people are sometimes afraid of saying the wrong thing, but it's wrong, you say, to avoid saying nothing, that because our connection with other people is one of the most important treasures of our life, and so often it's fear of recovering that is the greatest barrier to recovering itself, isn't it?
Yes, and I will tell your audience, anybody caring to listen to this, that don't hold back from talking to your friend who is grieving a loss. It's understandable that we're afraid we're going to say the wrong thing. Some people think, oh, if I say something, I'm going to remind them of their loss. Well, I assure you, they have not forgotten, whether it's 6 months down the road or a year down the road. And the worst thing for a person in mourning is to be ignored. So don't be afraid to say something to your friend. Two of the things that people said to us that I found the most helpful, they're so small and so simple. The people who said, I don't know what to say, or I have no words. And I told people, thank you for saying that, because it shows me that you don't fully comprehend the enormity of this sudden loss. And that's a good thing. And the other thing that some people said is weeks later, months later, I'm thinking about you today.
Right.
It's a wonderful, wonderful thing for somebody to tell you that they are taking a little bit of their mental energy there. They're holding you in their mind, and that's a great gift. So I encourage people, write a note, send an email, send a text, pick up the phone, say, I'm thinking about you today. So simple, but so meaningful. And just one other thing on this point, the thing that nobody thinks to say, because they think it will kind of bring about pain, but it doesn't, is to say, tell me about your loved one. Tell me mm-hmm. about your wife. Tell me about your husband who passed away, your daughter. Now, that may cause the grieving person to choke up. They may have a hard time saying something. But I guarantee you that it is a great gift to tell somebody that you have an interest in knowing something about the person who was lost. Because that is not just about you. It's about why this person was important to you.
Yeah, you want us to understand that we're not alone, or we're not inflicting pain by acknowledging someone's loss, but being alone in our suffering multiplies distress. And you write a chapter called Plotting, which you define as it simply means putting one foot in front of the other, and that each step is a gift from God and is an offering to God, and to survive means to continue to live. And you had to continue to live and show how to do that. And we have to ask ourselves if that is what we want to do, because it might cause even more pain.
Yes. Plotting. It's kind of a awkward word, but it means putting one foot in front of the next. I've talked with many people over the years going through difficult circumstances. It can be loss of a job. It can be distress of a different nature. But to go one day at a time, which I know sounds like a cliche, and I don't like cliches unless they're utterly, utterly true. And one day at a time is utterly true. But putting one foot in front of the next is a good thing. And in those early days, this was June when Eva passed away, I was thinking, how are we going to face Christmas? And that was a scary thought. How are we going to face Christmas? But then I realized it's June now. I don't need to worry about Christmas today. I'll figure that out when we get there. But I don't need to figure out what we're going to do years from now. We'll get there when we get there. But today, this is what I need to do. And as I say, in the early days, it's the most difficult. And then your mind gradually adjusts itself to this reality. That is a very, very important thing for people to know, is that your mind will adjust itself. Initially, it seems too difficult to believe, but eventually you will get used to what I call this harsh new reality, and you'll be able to live with that.
Some people would say that you're a pastor, and so you face things differently whenever you tell us that you never blame God for this loss, that you had no anger toward God. But that didn't have so much doing with the fact that you had been a pastor, does it? It's part of being human, right?
Yeah, I think it's just different for everybody. And I've walked with enough families through tragic losses in their life to know that if somebody does feel angry or angry at God, that is not a sin. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just a sense of angst. As Jesus himself at the tomb of Lazarus, it says he wept, and the word means a kind of angst about things. For me personally, I felt more sadness and fear. I just didn't feel anger toward God. Part of it may be, too, that I lost my father when I was 4 years old. He was just 27 years old at the time that he died. I had seen other losses in my life. My son was in a near-fatal auto accident several years ago. And so I have accepted for a long time that loss is going to come my way. But everybody's reaction is going to be different. There's nothing wrong or right about it, but you need to try to adjust properly to navigate those early waters so that you can get through to smoother sailing later on.
And I was going to talk about it a little later, but your losses didn't end with your daughter. Those losses continued afterwards, didn't they?
Well, yes, my mother was in failing health, and she passed away 14 months after Eva. They were very much like each other, just really bright spots in the world, people that people loved being around. And my mother, you know, one of the most difficult things I ever did was to call her to let her know that her only granddaughter had passed away. But then before that happened, I had an accident. I fell off a ladder onto a concrete floor and broke my hip and my arm, and was in a lot of distress for about 3 months. I was in a wheelchair, actually, for 3 months. This was 11 months after Eva passed away. And so just as I was coming near the one-year mark, I had that set back and just had one more reminder that life does include sudden and painful incidents. And I learned not to ever go up on a ladder again. That's one thing I learned from it.
Right, because you could have actually been killed in that fall, right?
Yeah, it was on a concrete floor. I was up about 9 feet in the air, and more than one doctor told me if I had come down a little differently, I could have been paralyzed. If I had hit my head on the concrete, it would have been lights out. So I laid there screaming for my wife and son to come because I was kind of paralyzed, and I felt so bad that they needed to watch one more ambulance, one more crisis. But again, it's just reality. These are things that happen in life, and I was glad to be able to recover from it.
Right, and you teach us that when we are in the middle of the worst, we have to decide how much we can handle. And certainly you were in that position. So what then are some of the real reasons for hope in such circumstances?
Well, hope is more than wishful thinking. Hope, you know, Scripture says that there are three things that are our anchors: faith, hope, and love. Faith is belief that is developed over time. Faith that God is good, otherwise we wouldn't have good things in our life. And hope draws us into the future, but based upon the faith that is developed in the past. And hope says, because of good things and blessings in the past, I believe that there are good things in the future, which is not to be naively optimistic. I don't believe in simple optimism. I do believe in hope. Mm-hmm. And because of the blessings of the past, I have hope for the future. And then love is the third thing. And in this little book, A Chronicle of Grief, I write in here a lot about the love that we have for Eva and the fact that love can't be destroyed in an ambulance. Love can't disappear into thin air because somebody has moved from this life to the life to come. And I had the experience of believing that that love is real and that love goes on. And I don't talk about our love for Eva in the past, but as a present day reality.
Right. Yeah, you point out that one of the most important lessons learned is that we have to live in the present reality, as you just said, that we can make choices about what we will do. And within your context as a pastor for 10 years, are you still considered to be a pastor in the position you are now? I should have asked you this earlier.
Yes, I am. I do normal pastoral duties.
So I should be referring to you really as Pastor Mel Lawrence. Yeah, okay. My system, it would be different. No, I apologize for that. But you know then that the mission, you tell us that the mission of the community of faith is to receive grace and then to pass it on.
Yes, we made it through because, well, one of the major, major things is because of other people. I just cannot overemphasize how important it was that we knew that we had a handful of close friends who really authentically felt with us the pain. And the day of the funeral, I remember getting dressed thinking, how are we going to get through this? My son said to me, how are we going to get through this? And I said, I don't know, but we will be together. But our friends and acquaintances came to the funeral, and I felt like we were being carried along through their love. It's the most amazing thing. And I feel bad for people that they don't have as many people around them to support them, which is another reason why I'd urge your listeners, anybody who is grieving, to find the people who you do trust, who do care about you, and let them know what your journey is. Be there for other people. When something traumatic happens, drop everything if you can. Let them know that you're thinking about them every hour of the day. Don't just say to them, if there's anything I can ever do for you, let me know. Somebody came over to our house a couple days later and they cut the grass. They didn't ask, is there anything I can do for you? They just did it because they knew that we were kind of frozen in place. So the grace of God through other people is huge. But we need to be willing to do that, even if it's uncomfortable being around people that are grieving. It's not necessarily easy to ask somebody who is mourning, how are you doing? Because they may be honest with us, and they're sad, and it makes us sad, but it's the most important gift we can give somebody.
No question. Grief, as we've said throughout this discussion, is different for every person. We just have about half a minute before we take our break, and I'll come back to these two points a little bit later in the next segment of our program. But you point out that thinking about the future can be terrifying in circumstances like this, and also that peace is possible. Peace is possible because real peace can coexist with pain. And again, reading your book, they're gonna feel what you feel, what they're feeling. They're gonna know that you've been through it. And so we're gonna take this break, and then we'll be back.